This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our September 5th, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And I hope everyone had a great holiday weekend. Hopefully got out there in some warm weather, near a body of water, hopefully. I know I was at the beach, so hopefully everyone else enjoyed their time off and their lack of labor on Labor Day. And now today it's all about enabling the average investor to realize better than average results. That's what we do here each and every weekday on Invest Talk. And whether you manage your own money or work with a professional like us, as always, your questions are welcome. Now, you can call us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or live, 4 to 5 Pacific time, and we can get to your question live, or you can always leave a message later, and we'll answer it on the next program. And we'll get to that in a moment. But today, firms have been trimming commissions, expanding their online tools, offering more transaction-free mutual funds and ETFs, enhancing their mobile apps and mobile experience. So today we're going to talk about shopping for the best online broker. I'm going to highlight a few, what are the pros and the cons. In the end, it comes down to what your needs are, but I'm going to talk about what those are coming up. And that's our main talking point today. We'll see if we can help you out with that, make sure your money's held at the right place. Now, before we go any further, let's check that 24-hour listener line. It's open for your questions anytime you want. Actually, we're going to go to a live call to Noel in Napa. How you doing, Noel?
Very good, Justin. Yes, I was calling about Oclaro, OCLR.
Okay.
Thought I'd get your take on a little company.
Okay, OCLR, $1.4 billion market cap. I wouldn't say that's little. I'd say it's small-ish, but it certainly has decent amount of heft. Let's see, what do they do? They are, it's coming up, make transmitters, modulators, receivers, transceivers, laser chips, amplifiers used in optical networks. Interesting. I like the space. The big issue here is that growth has been slowing dramatically. 2 quarters ago, you had a peak in revenue growth of about 64%. 4 quarters ago, you had earnings up over 1,000% year over year. Well, last quarter, revenue was only up 19% and earnings up 82%, which sounds great, but you have a market slowdown from just a few quarters ago. And that's one of the reasons why the stock has kind of been stuck here, right? Since end of last year, it's been trading pretty much between $8 and $10. Now it's back down to that 8-ish level. So it sounds like you're looking to pick it up, or do you own it and trying to figure out what to do with it?
Oh, I bought it recently. I'm planning to hang on to it for a long-term basis. I just thought I'd get your take on it, though.
Okay. I do like the space. The telecom companies are going to be building out their 5G networks in the next few years, and this sounds like a company, I'd have to look into it, but sounds like a company in the fiber optic space that would benefit from that. What is your thesis of why you want to hold it long term?
Well, I'm usually a long term type person, and I guess that's just the way I am. I'm not a trader.
Okay.
So, and I guess the optical business appeals to me. I think that's going to be an area of interest.
I see what you're saying, but you know, whenever you're looking long term, you always want to have a thesis. I mean, you can be a long term investor, but you need to know why you're holding it long term. And you know, is it a good value at these levels? Do they have something about their business that is fantastic that's going to sustain profits long term? That's what I would need to know. You know, this is a business, if you look at the history, from 2008 to 2000 and 15, they were losing money pretty much every year. A little bit in 2010, they made some money. But they don't have a consistency of profits and revenue growth. It's kind of up and down. And that's what makes me a little worried. And over the last few years, it's been great. But is this just one of those times when things are great and then, you know, 2 years from now, it could all fall apart again and you have a few down years and you're going to have massive volatility? So I would really need to understand their business. I like what you're saying that, you know, fiber optics, that's great. But, you know, what about a company like Corning, right, which is in the same space, and they have certainly a bigger business. They might have better technology that'll sustain their profits better long term. You'll get less volatility with that, and probably more return potentially, right? So
yeah, I'll take a look at Corning.
Yeah, that's the way I would think about it. I like where you're looking. But I'm looking at the history of the company makes it hard for me to say this is a surefire long-term hold simply because of its up and down operating history. Now I wanted to know, is this last few years just something because the industry is changing a little bit and they're riding the wave and they're just part of it, but they're really not great and a leader in that industry? Or is it something that's changed about the business that does make them a great long-term hold in all markets? Does that make sense?
Right. Okay. Yeah, I'll keep an eye on it. Do you normally come out when Steve is doing out in the field doing seminars? Are you normally accompanying him? Or
When he's meeting with clients kind of one-on-one, I'm usually not. Well, it's usually Steve.
Yeah,
but yeah.
No, but I mean, well, when he's meeting with groups.
Yeah, we do that. We'll probably do one here near the end of the year up in the Bay Area. And, yeah, I'm always there speaking along with Steve, yeah.
Yeah, the closest thing that you ever get to Napa is probably San Jose.
Yeah, San Jose would be the one.
Yeah, okay, I'll keep an eye out.
All right.
Anyhow, I appreciate you and Steve. I appreciate the way you handle your callers in a nice, friendly manner.
Well, I appreciate that, and we appreciate your call. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, well, take care, Justin. Bye-bye.
You too. Have a great day. Now, on a day like today, you know, market was down. What do you do about it? What do you think about it? Of course, there are fundamentally long-term investors like Noel, who was looking at a company and trying to figure out whether he should hold it long term. And I'm not sure I gave him a definitive answer, but hopefully I pushed him in the right direction to start thinking about show them how to think about whether it was a good long term hold or not. And maybe you're more of a trader, right? And you're more of maybe technicals and you see opportunities that way. That's certainly a way that you can be successful. There's more than one way to skin a cat, right? Is the old saying, and that's certainly the case when it comes to the markets. There's more than one way to make money. Some require more work than others. Some require more risk tolerance than others. Some are more appropriate for certain goals than others. So what kind of investor are you? Now, is the market cause for concern right now? I'd say, yeah, it is. And strategist Jim Paulson says the same thing. One thing that is not an issue for him, at least, is pretty decent economic growth. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. It's not great, but it's not fantastic. It's not bad. Now, in fact, Jim Paulson believes he thinks a drop in bond yields and a lower dollar are going to stimulate the economy. And I would say that is stimulating the economy. But is it also the bond market telling us that the economy is slowing? That's something to consider as well. So remember, there's always two sides of a move in any particular asset class that matters. Lower interest rates are the bond market's way of saying, you know what, the economy's slowing down, and I don't think the Fed's going to tighten as fast as they're threatening to. But that also gives a more, and that's more short-term, it gives a more medium to long-term tailwind to the economy because of lower interest rates, cheaper money. Same with the dollar. Dollar is telling you that Trump's economic policies and are not going to pass, right? He didn't get health care passed. He's working on tax reform. I think it's dead on arrival because it's just there's no savings from anywhere else. The deficit hawks and the Republican side, there's a lot of issues there. There's trade problems that he's still working on. Hasn't really gotten much accomplished when it comes to legislation being passed. And that's the dollar weakening, but that is also going to be a tailwind for manufacturing. So remember, when you're looking at these movements, it's never one story. It's always multiple stories, and you have to calculate the impact on your investments in the economy when these things move. I'm financial advisor and licensed real estate consultant Justin Klein. Do you have a shopping list ready for possible buying opportunities? So how do you tell a market dip from a market downtrend? Let's talk about it. Maybe you have a question about something that's been on your mind. Give us a call. 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now. Let's go to Art in Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Justin. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty well. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I was just thinking about picking up some Under Armour.
Okay.
They've been beaten down because of Sports Authority, and probably the brick and mortars are getting killed by Amazon, I guess. So Under Armour seems to be taking a brunt of hit right now.
I actually don't think that's the main reason why Under Armour is going down. Because if you look at companies like Nike, even though they're not, you know, Nike's not blowing the doors off of the market. I think it's roughly flat, maybe slightly up for the year. They're not really the issue. I think mainly I understand this a little deeper than most, simply because Steve and I are investors in a company called Hyperice, and they're a small private company. One of my good friends is the founder, and he has had, you know, he has relationships within this this industry, the sports performance industry. And really the big issue is that Under Armour has poor leadership. Their brand is not gaining momentum like it was. You know, it was doing well when they signed Steph Curry, and they had a bunch of top athletes under their brand, but a lot of those athletes have kind of taken a little bit of a step back. They've had a lot of issues. And I think their leadership is the main issue. Starts at the top. And so while Under Armour, from a valuation standpoint, looks, I would say, somewhat undervalued, I don't think it's nearly cheap enough. So I think they need to change their management. I think they need to change their strategy when it comes to shoes and apparel and a lot of different things. So I'm just not a fan. They're not very forward thinking. I'm not a fan of the business and the company overall. And so I would not be buying Under Armour.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
No problem, Art. Thanks for the call. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. Get in touch. We have a line set aside just for you. 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278. It's how to reach me directly, 4 to 5 Pacific time on Invest Talk. Shopping for the best online broker. That's one of our talking points today, our main talking point. I also want to discuss a few things. Gold has been going up pretty fast, and you might say, or a lot of talking heads will say, it's because of North Korea, and that certainly could be part of it, but there are other reasons as well of why this is happening. I'm going to get into that. Also, a guide to college savings options. There's about four types of accounts that you can contribute to save for college or other types of education expenses for kids, grandkids, nieces and nephews, etc. And I'm going to get into the pros and the cons of that. And then lastly, what are factory orders, durable goods orders? What is the industrial sector telling us about the economy right now, or at least in the last couple months, and what does that look like? So those are things that are on my mind. But let's take a quick look at today's market, and then we'll get back to your phone calls as well. If you have any, give us a call, 888-99-CHART. Now, if we look at the Dow today, it was down 234 points, about a little over 1%. S&P down 18 points, NASDAQ down about 60 points. Crude oil was flat. Like I said, gold was up. You had interest rates down pretty markedly. It was a pretty big down or up day for fixed income, at least on the safe fixed income. Corporate or junk bonds sold off a little bit. And you're seeing kind of risk off. This is a lot to do with North Korea and the threat of Trump of threatening China with tariffs if they don't stop trading with North Korea, potential of war in North Korea. That's certainly a big catalyst that I think something's going to happen on that front this month. That's going to be a catalyst for the market one way or the other. And my guess it'll probably be to the downside because I just don't see that issue being resolved in a simple manner. So let's get back to our 24-hour anytime line and pick up a question, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Marty from Westfield. I'm a recent listener to the podcast and thoroughly enjoy your views on different stocks. My question is on Macy's. I know the stock is quite depressed over the past year, and I question whether or not it may be worth looking at now. The dividend is over 7%. The PE is quite low, and I wonder whether or not this is a value play or a value trap. I'll listen to the podcast for your answer, and thank you very much. Bye.
This is a great question, and it brings me back to my latest Invest Talk views that I did. I believe it was last week or two weeks ago. And it was about what type of retailers will survive Amazon's onslaught. And there's three features of retailers that will and should survive in this world of online shopping and Amazon. And I do think the demise of retail is exaggerated to a certain degree. I do think it is in trouble and going to evolve into certain types of retail shops will be gone completely. Others will be invented and created. And one of those type of shops that I'm talking about are companies that can create good experiences within the retail experience, right? And I think of Nordstrom's as one of those because of the customer service level that you have. You have Warby Parker that has been expanding their footprint as well. And so companies that can create superior in-store experiences will be able to survive. Now the question is, does Macy's qualify for that? And I would say probably not. I don't think their in-store experience is so much superior or superior at all to your average shopping experience for it to make shoppers loyal to Macy's. Certainly, I think they're better than a JCPenney's of the world or Kohl's, but I don't think they rise above the ranks of the average. So doesn't check the box for me there. Then brands, having good brands that people want, apparel brands, product brands that are bringing people into the store. And I do think Macy's has a few of those, but I don't think they have enough of their own brands that are really going to keep them the size that they are. Right, they mainly sell other people's brands as opposed to their own brands. And if you sell other people's brands, guess what? People don't really care where those brands come from, whether they come from Amazon or any other online store. They just want the cheapest price, and they don't care if it comes from Macy's or JCPenney or any of those other stores. So they're going to struggle. So Macy's to me doesn't check the box there either. And then you have scale. You have a large customer base that you can bargain with your suppliers and really get low prices and create strong operating margins. And I think they have a decent advantage there, but I don't love it. I don't think it's good enough to really make me excited about the name. Now, if I'm going to pick a department store, this might be second behind Nordstrom's, but I just still don't love it long term. And I don't think that dividend yield is safe long term, especially with their level of debt. So I don't think Macy's is an imminent peril, but I do think a recession will challenge their business greatly. And so that's why I would not be buying Macy's. Give me a call. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. You can reach me now at 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues. First, a couple of words for KPP Financial and their new Disciplined Equity Program. This is an addition to KPP's select investment programs, and it raises expectations. It targets focused growth for maximum returns. This strategy offers consistent exposure to the equity markets by focusing on only high-quality companies. And although the portfolio is concentrated, it limits exposure to any one sector of the market. Check it out if you're interested. Click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com or click on Contact Steve, and he'll gladly fill you in about it. As with all of KPP's programs, a KPP financial principal is personally invested right alongside their clients. This is parallel investing, and it's your assurance of optimum care and diligence. The new Disciplined Equity Program from KPP Financial. Now let's get back to the podcast. And now let's get back to your questions on InvestTalk. It's all about your money. Have a question right now? Check in. Financial advisor Justin Klein is ready for your money question. Our direct line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. Justin, this is Dave in Pennsylvania. I'm calling today about stock Public Storage, PSA. I've been following this for a while. I know a year or so ago you guys mentioned you'd love to have this under 200. Well, it's there. Actually, it's been there a couple of times in the last year, around 197 or so, and it's popped back up there. It looks like it's doing the same thing now. So on a chart, it looks like a good buy point maybe. Also, fundamentally, it looks pretty sound. It looks to be a leader in this space, from what I can see. The only thing that concerns me is maybe sales has dipped a bit, revenue. Last earnings report, they missed it by about 13% or so. But the stock seems to be popping up. So I'm just wondering your opinion, is this a good time to buy this? It's a good value for the price. It seems to be, at least superficially from what I can see on my resources. But I'm just wondering if you have any opinion on it. Thanks again. Bye.
I was looking at PSA, Public Storage. This is a REIT that acquires, owns, and operates 2,348 self-storage facilities in 38 U.S. states and 219 in Europe. So certainly heavily concentrated here in the United States. Earnings have grown from about $5.22 in 2010 to an expected $10.21 in this year and $10.64 next year. And it's been steadily growing. The stock has come down, though. It's 52-week high, or I at least say it's, if you go back to middle of early part of last year, was about $275 a share. Now it's at $206. Did dip below $200 briefly. And it is starting to look intriguing. Very little debt. Their yield about 4%, and their payout ratio is about 108%, but it's a REIT, so they have to pay out a lot, most of their cash flow, which is expected. Most REITs have very high payout ratios, so I'm not really worried about that, especially considering their debt levels are relatively modest. Return on equity is strong, about 16%. I like that. And return on invested capital strong. So all the metrics are very strong. So I like the company. The only worry for me is you have to understand this isn't like historically cheap or anything like that. It's certainly much cheaper. I would say it's about fairly valued, maybe slightly undervalued at these levels. And in a recession, however, you'll probably see this being a more cyclical type of name than most retail names, simply because when people lose their jobs and they tend to not want to pay their storage bills, these storage bills. When they're trying to reduce their monthly expenses, these are the things that people tend to have less of. They find ways to sell things, get rid of things, consolidate their lives, and get rid of that bill. And that's why, you know, in 2008, you did see a dip in revenue all the way until 2010, really. 2007 had about $1.8 billion in sales, 2010 and $1.6 billion. So you saw during a recession a little bit of decline there, and the price suffered as well. You saw a decline in 2000 and – sorry, I just clicked the wrong button. In 2008, it went high, from a high in 2007 of about $117 all the way down to $47. So – understand that this is a higher risk type of REIT income play simply because of the nature of the business. But it is a great business. So you really need to be a long-term holder at these prices, which are modestly attractive, but not a screaming buy by any means. So I hope that helps. Thanks for the call. Now let's get to our main talking point today, which is about picking the best online broker. Now, a lot of people call in and ask that or email us through info@investtalk.com of how do you pick a good broker? Well, and there's multiple factors. There's commission charges, obviously, but that's not where it starts and ends. It's maybe 20% at most, I think, of what you need to consider when you're picking a broker. There's also investment choices, right? No-load mutual funds that are available, no-load ETFs that are available. Other types of, can you trade bonds in that brokerage firm? Those are important as well. Then there's tools and research, charting tools, research tools to figure out what to buy, when to buy it. That's certainly a factor. If you're a long-term buy and holder, maybe charts are less of a factor than if you are a fundamental investor and you need research on the company and fundamentals, etc. Then there's ease of use. If you're not technologically savvy, you probably need a broker that has that's very easy to navigate and understand where to go and how to do things on the website or the mobile app or the phone app, etc. And then advisory services. Do they offer financial planning? Any personalized advice? You know, like we create financial plans for our clients using a fantastic piece of software. Does the broker have something, you know, it's going to be not as good, but it may be somewhat similar. That's something to consider as well. So everybody's needs are going to be a little bit different. And you need to know by what type of investor you are, what your goals are, of which ones to focus on, or what features to focus on. Now, there's obviously Fidelity, which is probably the largest out there, $4.95 a trade now. Most brokers are lowering commissions pretty dramatically. It's pretty easy to move money in and out of a brokerage account at Fidelity. They're very good for cash management, easy to pay bills. See the complete picture of your financial life, you know, on the Fidelity site, mortgages, and on Fidelity accounts. That can be helpful as well. And so that's something to think about. They have Fidelity Visa rewards cards. We use the NFS, which is National Financial Services, which is a subsidiary of Fidelity. So we don't use directly Fidelity. We have two brokers we use. One custodies through NFS. So we like Fidelity overall. But based on your needs, you might want something else. There's also Merrill Lynch that's certainly good. They have a lot of good research tools. Charles Schwab has a lot of no-load, no-transaction-fee mutual funds and ETFs that can be helpful if that's the way you're looking to go. E-Trade has a lot of research tools. Same with TD Ameritrade has fantastic research tools and a lot of no transaction fee ETFs. That's where we set up all of our new accounts for clients now is TD Ameritrade, and we certainly are big fans of them, and we think they're great for all types of investors, and that's why we use them, because they're kind of a good go anywhere, right? They're very flexible. And then there's Vanguard, which you'll get the low-cost ETFs and Vanguard ETFs and mutual funds. But if you're looking to buy individual stocks, they can be pretty pricey on commissions, or bonds. They can be pretty pricey. They're not that user-friendly. They don't give you real-time quotes, etc. So if you're just looking to index, which I think everyone's over-indexed right now, that's not a bad way to go. But it's certainly not very flexible. At least Vanguard isn't. So that wouldn't be my favorite. So my top three would be TD Ameritrade for its flexibility. Fidelity would be second. And then probably E-Trade would be third on my list. But everyone's going to be different based on their needs. Now, Steve will be in San Jose on the 27th of this month for individual retirement reviews. But let's say you're not near the Bay Area. You can still take advantage of this valuable service. Get your life in order. Get your financial life in order and understanding where you're at and what your goals are and whether you're on track for it. And Steve and I can do that via Skype or telephone if you would like. And you can reserve these limited hours with us. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, then Portfolio Review.
Check your pulse. When it comes to investing, does your heart rate kind of go up when the risk level rises? It's important for you to know your tolerance for investment risk. It's at the foundation of planning your portfolio. Take our award-winning risk analysis quiz. It's free and it's there for you anytime on investtalk.com. Just click on the Invest Talk tab.
Hello, Steve or Justin. This is Julian from Spain. I have a question regarding cash and cash equivalents and retained earnings. One is in the asset part of the balance sheet. The other is in the equity part of the balance sheet. They look very similar to me, so I think I'm missing something. Thank you, and look forward to the answer in the show. Bye-bye.
I like these questions. Getting into balance sheets and cash flow statements, and the things that professionals like us look at a lot, but the average person doesn't, but they are very important. But he's asking about a cash and equivalents and retained earnings. And you have three parts of a balance sheet. You have assets, you have liabilities, and you have stockholder equity, shareholder equity, whatever you want to call it. Now, you take... assets are always going to equal liabilities plus stockholder equity. Just how balance sheets work. Now he's looking at cash and equivalents, and this is usually liquid assets, short-term investments, cash in corporate bank accounts, etc. These are all things that are going to be important to look at and understand with a company, especially in relation to short-term debt. That's something that needs to be considered, and you need to understand how those work together, right? And then there's stockholders' equity, and then retained earnings is what he's talking about. Retained earnings is what's not paid out to shareholders after all the earnings. Company earns, say, $1 a share. They pay out a certain, say, 50 cents a share in dividends. Well, 50 cents of that is going to go into shareholder equity. And what is specifically retained earnings. And then there's cash and equivalents. That's just simply cash flows that are coming in and held on the balance sheet. So they're very different. They are both on the balance sheet, but I don't think they really have a relationship to one another. Hopefully I could clarify that for you and give you a sense of what those are, but they're related only the fact that they're both on the balance sheet and they balance each other out to some degree, but both sides all encompass together have to balance each other out. So they're not really that related. Now let's go to one of our talking points today. Let's go with gold. Gold is breaking out. And a lot of talking heads are going to say could have to do with North Korea and tough trade talk by President Trump. But it could also, it most likely is part of that, but also has something to do with the fact that a tax code rewrite and pro-growth promises that sent the dollar soaring after the Trump election have come down. And the weak dollar is the main reason why gold is going up. And then there's potential of a government shutdown that is certainly a worry for the economy and is likely to reduce the chances that the Fed is going to tighten monetary policy to a dramatic degree in the near future. Now, gold is up about 16% so far this year in 2017. Guess what? That's better than the overall S&P 500. So it's tempting to blame the rally on gold prices on North Korea, but it's probably only about maybe 20 to 25% of the recent advance, to my estimate. That's no one's ever going to know, but that's my estimate of how much it's of the recent move is North Korea. Now, in order for, I think, gold to lose its momentum, it's certainly going to hit resistance when it gets back to last summer's highs from a technical perspective, and I think that's probably where we're going on gold prices. But for the dollar to regain strength, there's going to need to be some change in partisan politics in Washington. They need to pass spending bills to maybe stimulate the economy a little bit more, avoid a government shutdown, pursue some infrastructure projects that were promised by the Trump administration. And, you know, none of those things look to be imminent. And it's really easy to pin the gold's advancement on geopolitics, but in reality, it's only one part of the equation. And then you ask, what type of, is gold the best hedge against geopolitical disruption? And the answer is actually it's not. It's not a bad hedge, but oil is actually the biggest, or the best hedge against against these type of geopolitical tensions, which is pretty interesting. And I actually like gold here, or gold and oil here. Now, oil has certainly more longer-term issues, I think, than the gold market, simply because of shale oil and headwinds. But I think oil stocks have gotten pretty cheap, pretty beaten up, and sentiment's been pretty bad. And I think you'll see a bounce in the near future. And so I actually kind of like gold and oil for geopolitical reasons and for the fact that the dollar has been very, very weak, and that tends to be a tailwind for commodity prices overall. Now you're listening to Invest Talk, and we're listening to you 24 hours a day. You can ask your question anytime. We can talk together live 4 to 5 Pacific time. I'll try to get your question in at 888-99-CHART. And coming up, for a college savings plan that works for you, we're going to talk about that. Give us a call at 888-99-CHART. Let's go to Bill in Northern California. How you doing, Bill?
Hey, great, Justin. Thank you. So what can you tell me about this Arbor Realty Trust, Inc.? It's got a high dividend, and it looks like the PE is low. Does it look like a prudent holding to have?
Well, this is a REIT, and it's lumped in with the mortgage REITs that are out there, and that's what they do, right? They borrow short, and they buy mortgage assets, and usually there's some sort of leverage involved with their business, and that's how they create that profit. And when things are going well, they're fine. Its problem is when things don't go well, they get hurt pretty badly. You know, its market cap's about $500 million, but its enterprise value is $2 billion, meaning they have about $1.5 billion in debt on their balance sheet. And that creates that leverage and creates good profits when things are going well. So it is a high-risk investment. You know, anything in this market that's yielding 7, 8, 9, 10 plus percent is going to be high risk. Now, technically, it's doing okay. from a technical perspective. It did have a big reversal in the middle of this year that worries me, and it's been kind of, I would call it consolidating bearishly, and that would worry me. It's right above the 200-day moving average, and I could easily see that breaking because it's kind of been sitting there for a while. So I'm just not a fan of it. There's probably better ones in the industry that you could get into with less leverage, maybe a similar yield. But any company in this industry doing what they're doing is high risk because a recession is certainly going to hit the value of those bonds that they're holding. There's going to be a rise in defaults. And based on the ability to discern between good bonds and bad bonds is going to make or break a company like ABR, which is Arbor Realty Trust.
How do you think that would go down? The price would drop, and then they'd cut off the dividend at the same simultaneously.
Yeah, that's exactly what will happen. If you look at the history of they got rid of their dividend in 2009, 10, and 11, right when things got bad. And so people got to remember that dividends can be cut and eliminated very easily. Not like bond. Bond payments have to be paid. Otherwise, you go bankrupt. Dividend payments can be cut off quickly. And I think this is a name that in a rough economy will likely happen. So it's extremely high risk type of dividend play.
Very good. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Bill. Now let's talk quickly about college savings options. You know, kids are heading back to school right now, so parents are probably thinking about these things, and there are some differences between tax treatments, how much you can contribute, who can contribute, the rules of governing distributions, and the summary of the types of individuals who tend to benefit from these accounts. So there's four types of ways that you can save for somebody's college education. There's 529 plans, there's a Coverdale Education Savings Account, there's a UTMA or a UGMA as well, and then there is a Roth IRA as a way that you could do it. Now, 529 plans, contributions are not deductible from federal income tax, but they can give you some state tax breaks, depending on your state deduction. You know, could get a deduction or a credit, and the money grows tax-free. Withdrawals to pay for qualified college expenses are also tax-free as well. And you can put up to $70,000 per person or $140,000 per married couple with the five-year election, which is a complex IRS rule you have to look into. But you can put a lot of money into 529 plans. There are some limits, but that's really the best. If you're trying to put a lot of money in, that's the best one. If you're looking for, there's not a lot of investment flexibility in that, whereas a Coverdale or an Atmore or a Roth does have more investment flexibility. Don't have time. Maybe I'll save this for another show because I want to get into that a little bit more. Time's up for the hour. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasy and the whole KPP family, thank you for being with us. Join us for Invest Talk again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.